The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my dearest friend, my partner, my engineer, and my co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
What a beautiful day it is here in Sonoma County at KBBF. Oh, it's just wonderful. I mean, I'm so happy that I live in California, to be honest with you. You know, it's hard to believe that here we are, July 2nd. Where did the other 6 months go? I mean, it's just felt like this year has been flying. And here we'll be on Wednesday. It's going to be July 4th when we celebrate independence. And I want to do a shout out because my son-in-law, Dave Jensen, he is actually born on the 4th of July. So happy birthday to the world's best son-in-law, of course, mine, best husband, dad, and friend, Dave Jensen. Happy birthday, Dave, and I wish you many, many more. Well, I have two great guests this morning. I have one guest with me in the studio is our former California Senator, Noreen Evans, who is now working with local lawyers and involved with many of the fire victims who lost their homes here in Sonoma County. And we'll be talking about what's happening with some of the issues around rebuilding and, oh my God, there's just so many different areas to handle with this issue. And also, Noreen's going to give us a little insight into what's going on with PG&E. And I'm so excited. Oh my goodness, I'm almost tingling. Joining me on the phone will be Christine Pelosi, who is one of the organizers for the San Francisco March of Families Deserve to Stay Together. And she's an American Democratic Party political strategist and from California. She's author of this book called The Campaign, The Boot Camp, A Guide to Successful Campaigning. And she's also the daughter of our Congresswoman, Nancy Pelosi. So I'm really honored to have both of these really highly involved women on the show. Pay attention, because one of the questions that I'm going to ask them, there's two questions I think is important that people understand. What inspires them? I mean, you know, just many of us start out as volunteers. I know when I was looking at Noreen's resume, I said, oh my God, she volunteered for at least 6 to 7 committees before she even got onto the city council. And there you get a pittance. So, I mean, it's to me, these people, when they begin to serve, I mean, it's a tough hoe. So it's going to be very interesting to hear about what these women have to say about that. Wow, what an event it was on Saturday, not only in Santa Rosa, but across the nation, with folks coming out to express their opposition to separating children from their families. I cannot imagine what it must feel like, especially when your child is in the next room and you can hear him or her crying for their mother. Just the thought of it makes me sick. I mean, for heaven's sakes, I mean, and especially we have more women serving in the Senate and the Congress. How are they allowing this to happen? You know, I want to do a great shout out to the organizer of the event, Leslie Graves, who is also responsible for the Wednesday night market, and to all the volunteers who helped and all the organizations that came out. You know, I was so proud of us because we have such an active county. When you see all those organizations in one spot, you go, my God, people really care. You know, we're a caring community, and it really showed itself on Saturday. I found the following statement that I thought I would share with you. Leslie Graves on her Facebook. So I'll quote her. Here's what Leslie had to say. Hung out with 3,000 plus friends, family, and community yesterday. Well, that was on Saturday. So many moments touched my heart. From the individual stories of each of our amazing speakers to those who came and told me their stories afterwards. Courthouse Square was made for events like this, where the community comes together to effect change. We are all connected. And now, thanks to a great frontline community groups, we have the resources to take action in that change. Thank you again to everyone for coming out and standing together. That's from Leslie Graves, who is the organizer. if you see Leslie at the Wednesday night market, go up and just say thank you. I mean, this woman just pulled it together all of a sudden. And not only did she, one of the things Leslie proved is that we can all work together. All these progressive groups, all these different other organizations that maybe, you know, you might think of, you know, a little bit not quite as progressive but still have information, all the different speakers, all the different denominations of people, diversity, and children. There were so many children walking around, and I could not help, but every time I saw a child in her mother, in its mother's arms, it just brought a tear to my eye, you know, because I couldn't help but feel, I mean, I'm a mother. And I know my listeners out there, many of you are mothers. I mean, can you just imagine? I mean, I just don't even want to imagine it. So, you know, there's a lot to think about. And the most important thing is that we realize that who we are as a country. You know, on Wednesday, we are going to celebrate July 4th. Well, granted, it's a time for picnics and it's a time for fireworks. And, you know, every county's debating, you know, we're in the fire season. No, should we have fireworks or shouldn't we? But to many of us, do we really know what the Declaration of Independence is all about? You know, that we stood up to the king. We said, no more. We want to be a free people. We want freedom of religion. We want freedom to travel. You know, it's really interesting. So I'm going to read something that I pulled off the internet. I made a little blurb. You know, I call this Elaine's Educational Moment. Da-dup, da-dup, da-dup. Okay, here we go about Independence Day. We celebrate American Independence Day on the 4th of July every year. We think of July 4th, 1776, as a day that represents the Declaration of Independence and the birth of the United States of America as an independent nation. On July 4th, 1776, the 13 colonies claimed their independence from England, an event which eventually led to the formation of the United States. Each year on July 4th, also known as Independence Day, Americans celebrate this historic event. Now, historic event. But what's so historic about it, to me, is the preamble. I mean, visualize these people, uptight, angry, you know, just like, we're a little angry right now at President Trump about what's happening at the borders, you know. So imagine these people are angry at the king. This is their preamble, because the king was withholding this from them. Here we go. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men, I got to add women here, are created equal. Actually, I would put all human beings are created equal. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's what my grandmother, an immigrant, and her sister and her mother traveling on that boat from Russia, that's what they were seeking. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The Declaration of Independence states the principles on which our government and our identity, listen to that, as our identity as Americans are based. Unlike the other founding documents, the Declaration of Independence is not legally binding, but it is powerful. As Abraham Lincoln called it, a rebuke and stumbling block to tyranny and oppression. In other words, when we read the Declaration of Independence, that lets us know that we will not be oppressed and we do not believe in tyranny. It continues. Now listen to this line, and I know this is true, but we are losing our credibility by what we are doing. It continues to inspire people around the world to fight for freedom and equality. Amazing document. I really encourage you to go on Wikipedia, read about your Declaration of Independence, and see who you are, what country you live in, and what is our founding fathers, what are our basic principles. And I'll tell you, when you look at history, we have violated it many, many times. But I think right now we're at the age of communication where we can communicate, we can connect with one another, and we can see some of the wrongs, and maybe we can correct them. I mean, I have faith. So we're going to take a musical break. And what I did is I want to play this song called The Prayer of St. Francis. You know, it's very interesting. We now have a Pope Francis who actually identifies with St. Francis. And I want to send this out as a prayer for all of us. Listen to the words. Try to internalize them. Try to make at least one sentence, one part of this prayer, part of your life each and every day. You know, it's that there's a group here in Sonoma County called Doing Acts of Kindness. You know, sometimes just smiling at somebody is an act of kindness, or allowing somebody that has one item in the grocery line, say, oh, hey, I got 20. Come on, you go before me. All these little things that we can do to connect with each other. And as we connect, the connections get deeper and deeper. And then hopefully we'll all connect to listen and to read our preamble together and recognize who we are as a nation. So here we go. We're going to listen to the prayer of St. Francis, and I will be sending this out as a prayer for the world and all the children. I pray that all the children in the world one day can lay their heads down and close their eyes and feel safe and secure. When I return, we will be talking with one of my favorite people, Noreen Evans, former California senator, who is working with local lawyers and involved with many of the fire victims who lost their homes here in Sonoma County. And we'll be talking about what's happening with them and also get some insight into what's going on with PG&E. My goodness. I mean, when I listen to those words, make me an instrument of your peace. You know, that's a pretty big order. It's not easy. You know, we're standing up against a lot of power when we speak out, you know, but it's very, very important. Anyway, I want to remind my listeners, the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holt. And without further ado, I want to introduce my first guest, attorney and former California State Senator, Noreen Evans. Noreen, welcome. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Happy to be here, and thank you for having me again.
Oh, no, I just love it. I just think you are such a, you said to me when we were on the break that I inspired you. Well, I'll tell you something. You have inspired me over the years. So, you know, I looked at your resume, and it's pretty impressive. And so I try to glean the best of both words. So let me tell my listeners a little bit about you. Is that okay?
Sure.
Noreen Evans is a California native and has been practicing law in Sonoma County since 1982. She served in the California State Legislature for a decade and is responsible for numerous pieces of legislation relating to the administration of justice and California's wine industry. Noreen received her BA degree in government with honors in 1978 from California State University, Sacramento. She graduated from University of the Pacific McGeorge School of Law in 1981. In 1986, after just many, many volunteer services, I mean, on the Planning Commission, all kinds of different things, Noreen was elected to the Santa Rosa City Council and reelected in 2000. And that's when I first met Noreen. She served until 2004, and then she was elected to represent the 7th Assembly District in the California State Assembly and served until 2014. Noreen became the first and only woman to receive the Judicial Council Stanley Moss Defender of Justice Award. Really proud of you. My goodness, I got to say this again. She was the first and only woman to receive the Judicial Council Stanley Moss Defender's Justice Award. And currently she works at the law firm of O'Brien, Waters, and Davis, LLP. How's that? Did I do anything?
You did great.
Anything else you'd like
to
add?
There's one other thing. I'm actually of counsel with one of the fire litigation attorneys, and that firm is called Watts Guerra.
Oh, so you're
I'm doing a whole lot right now.
Well, you know, Noreen, you know, before we begin with talking about all the legally stuff. You know, this is Women's Spaces, and I want to know what sparked your interest in law and then politics. And as a woman specifically, what were some of your challenges and how did you overcome them? I mean, you've been involved in so many committees, and I'm sure you were outnumbered. So
quite often. Well, I would say that the thing that inspired me to become a lawyer is injustice. And you mentioned that I'm the only woman to ever receive the Stanley Moss Defender of Justice Award. That's one of the things I'm the most proud of, because that's really what inspires me to go to work every day, and what inspired me to get involved in politically and as well as to go to law school is to try to overcome injustice and to be a voice for people who don't have voices of their own. And as you know, because you give voice to women all the time, it's not the easiest thing in the world to do, but it's very inspiring work.
Well, what were some of your challenges being as a woman?
A woman of a certain age, too. I mean, when I went to school, we didn't even have girls sports when I was in high school. Girls weren't supposed to speak up in class. We weren't expected to study mathematics or science. You know, there was that time, I was born in 1955, so in that period where women were expected to stay home and have children, and the people were segregated at the time. And one of the things that really inspired me to go to law school, I was at a very young age, I saw the film To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh.
And the lawyer that Gregory Peck portrayed has been my example of a lawyer since I can remember. So that's what I'm certainly not Gregory Peck, but I use that example in my life every day and in every circumstance.
Well, you know, it was a very interesting movie, and also he took a chance, you know, even defending,
he did.
You know, I mean, his, when you look at racism, it's so interesting. I would recommend people watch that movie.
Because it's a great film.
It shows the justice, but it also shows the racism and how oftentimes it is blocked. Justice is literally blocked to a certain level of people. So.
Well, and the other thing the film did, because remember, it's narrated from the perspective of Gregory Peck's daughter, Scout. So there was, some very subtle undercurrents in the film. The racism was obvious. There was also some understanding of sexism and some understanding of the discrimination of people who are somehow different. There was another character in the film, I'm forgetting the actor's name, he's very, very well known, but the character was named Boo. And he was the next door neighbor who was a little bit creepy and mysterious because he was very misunderstood. And he had some physical and mental handicaps. So there's some scenes in that film where Scout had to really become to understand who Boo was and to overcome her fear of him being different.
That's interesting.
It really involves a whole lot of aspects.
That's really interesting, especially when you think of our president at one time imitating, you know.
That. Oh,
I mean, it's
horrific.
Really sad.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a lot of women right now running for office. How do you feel about that? Do you think that's important? And what are some suggestions if one of the people out there happens to be listening and would like to get into politics? What are some suggestions you might make?
Well, I think it's fantastic. First of all, study after study has shown, and experience in other countries have shown, and our own experience has shown that once you get a critical mass of women in any organization, things shift. And the critical mass is generally one-third women. So we don't even need a majority. We just need a third. And the dialogue shifts, and the focus shifts, and the priorities start to shift. And I saw this in my own time in the state legislature. When we had enough women in the room, we would actually start to talk about how our policies impacted women and children, what were going to be the future of our communities, and how could we make that different. It's very difficult to describe, but there is definitely a noticeable shift in priorities and in focus.
Well, of course. I mean, my goodness. Well, you know, thank you for sharing that, and that is very important. You know, right now we have a majority of women on our board of supervisors.
Yes, we do.
You know, and there's a little controversy about the commission on the women's commission.
On the status of women.
Women, you know, they might be cutting some funding. So I hope that doesn't happen. It shouldn't happen.
Especially now.
Right, especially now. And with three women, I mean, how could it happen? Anyway.
Well, I do want to mention, I served on the state status commission on the status of women when Governor Brown tried to remove all funding from us. And we raised a fuss. And that's the other thing women can do with great strength. And you don't even have to be dramatic or emotional, but to raise a fuss. Don't let things happen in silence, but raise a fuss and start to point them out, and other people start to pay attention to that. It's very powerful.
You know, there's a song that I love, I play a lot, called by a woman by the name of Ellen Booksdale, called "By My Silence, I Give My Consent."
Yes.
So if you got tape on your mouth and you're just saying, oh, yeah, it's okay, let the kids take the way of the border, you know, it's fine. Oh, it's okay if they cut my Social Security, you know, I'll find it. Oh, no, it's not okay.
You've got to speak up, and the other thing I learned is you have to bear witness. And sometimes bearing witness means simply standing by and observing and making sure that things don't get out of hand. You don't even have to necessarily do something to bear witness.
It's amazing. It's amazing. There are so many things we can do that we don't even, you know,
right.
And just to start thinking about it. Well, let's catch up with the current situation, you know. I've been reading in the press, Democrat, you know, all kind of, by the way, for the folks in that are listening in other parts of Northern California, the Press Democrat is our paper here in Sonoma County. You know, I've been reading things about lots of stuff going on with PG&E, and also lots of controversy, lots of different meetings going around the community about these fire victims, and hearing some gossip from other people, like maybe they can't get their insurance, they're underinsured, or they don't know whether to rebuild, and all these permits. So give us a little overview of what happened and what is happening.
Well, everybody knows about the wildfires that occurred in Northern California in October, and it displaced thousands of people. It burned over 5,000 structures, and I say it. There was actually a number of different fires. There was the Atlas, there was the Nuns, there was the Tubbs, there was the Mendocino Complex, and a whole host of other ones. So there are thousands of people in our community that have been left without homes. All of their memories have been destroyed. They had to evacuate in the middle of the night with no notice whatsoever, and so they're left with a lot of emotional issues to deal with arising out of that fire. And report after report coming out of CAL FIRE has said that PG&E is responsible. We're still waiting for the Tubbs fire report, but all the other fires, PG&E is responsible. And our evidence shows that PG&E is also responsible for the Tubbs fire. So it's pretty horrific when you think about this. PG&E is a multi-billion, $39 billion corporation. It's a public monopoly, and it has very strict laws that mandate what it's supposed to do to maintain its equipment and to trim the vegetation so fires like this do not start. And we have been learning that PG&E has a decades-long history of failing to do what the law requires it to do.
And let me ask you a question here. So what you're saying is, like, let's say I'm up in Fountain Grove, which is really heavily with lots of vegetation. I mean, my God. All right, so then you have whatever PG&E has, you know, a box, you know, that, or whatever, however they're picking their meters. And then you're saying maybe around some of them are weeds or stuff that are.
Right.
They're supposed to take care of that.
Yes. PG&E has the obligation to trim vegetation around its power poles and around its lines so that it doesn't fall into a line or a pole and knock it down during high wind. That's their responsibility. I'm sure you've seen those trees on the street that are cut at the top in a V. Yeah. In a V shape. That's to allow the line to go through so that the tree doesn't shake around in a strong wind and hit the line and knock it down. PG&E, the law is really clear. And there's statutes, there's Public Utilities Commission regulations, and there's Supreme Court decisions that say PG&E has this obligation. And it has not been fulfilling that obligation for quite some time. So as a result, when the winds kicked up in October, we had all these wildfires caused by PG&E's equipment.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about the winds. Ken and I were in our backyard, and all of a sudden we said, this is so weird. I mean, it was the weirdest wind, and later on we found out that this is like a 40-year type of
right.
trail that happens, that it could happen every 40 years, and man, it really did happen. It was a very scary 2 weeks, and it's funny that you mentioned PG&E, because we were lucky. We didn't lose our home, but we were only about a mile and a half from Coffee Park, and our neighbor's tree caught on fire. But what happened in our neighborhood, there was a PG&E truck there, so we felt if the PG&E truck was there, we were safe, so we decided not to move. So it was a very, very interesting time. So what steps are you taking? I mean, what is happening? I mean, is it a bunch of homeowners that have come together? Is it just a law firm? Well, how is this taking place?
Yeah, well, there are a number of lawsuits now pending against PG&E, and people have until October 2019 to file their own lawsuit. It's what's called mass tort litigation. It's not a class action. Class action is when everybody was harmed in the same way, and here everybody's harmed in an individual way. So they each have their own lawsuit. There's about 100 different law firms that are signing up clients. My law firm is one of them. It's a legal team of Morrow, Archer, and Watts Guerra, and I'm part of that. You can probably hear radio ads and TV commercials all the time. The interesting thing that we've done, speaking of strong women that speak out, we have added Erin Brockovich to our team.
Oh my God, you got to be. Comes to Sonoma County.
Yes, and she'll be here again on July 8th and 9th. We added her to our team because, you know, the story of her is in the mid-1990s, she actually worked with a lawyer who sued PG&E on behalf of the town of Hinckley. And PG&E had been poisoning the well water in Hinckley for quite some time, and there was a huge cancer cluster that was beginning to develop there. PG&E had lied about it. They had covered it up. They had made misstatements to the press. They had literally told people the wrong thing who lived in the town of Hinckley, and she uncovered all that. So for the last 30-some years, she's been working against PG&E, and now she's on our side.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. Well, I hope that she's here. Maybe we can get her on the air here to go talk about what's happening.
We will have to make that happen.
Oh, my God.
You'll enjoy that. She's amazing.
So what other things do you have to share that you think are important that folks need to know about this?
Well, I think, you know, you started out the program by talking about the rally on Saturday. I was there. 3,000 people were there, it sounds like, from all around Sonoma County. It was really inspiring to see. I think we need to talk more about this. We need to really, again, as I said before, raise a fuss. These are children that are being taken away from their parents who have come to this country that used to be a beacon of hope. I mean, this is being done in our names and on our watch. So it's our responsibility to do, as I mentioned, bear witness and raise a fuss and make sure that we stop this. It's just horrific. I can't even really imagine this is happening.
Well, you know, I've never been in the legislators. I've never, you know, you got pretty high up in California. I mean, when you're sitting on the California State Assembly, I mean, that's amazing.
And
that's
the Senate.
That's where it's happening. How do people logic when they vote against, like, human rights or medical or what kind of mindset do you think they have? I mean, what is there a fear? Are they really being paid off, or they just don't care? They're just there, and then, you know, I don't know.
Well, I've spent a lot of time trying to figure that out myself because serving in the legislature can be a rewarding but also frustrating experience. And, you know, all people are different. Just like any other group of people, the legislature is pretty representative of the communities that it is representing. And some people are timid. Some people are uninformed or undereducated. Some people are misled and mistaken. There's just a whole host of reasons why people do what they do. What we're seeing in Congress right now, I think, is a whole different thing. You can see the entire Republican caucus in Congress is afraid to speak out. And Republicans there have a lot of party discipline, and this is one time where their party discipline is not serving them well. It's leading them in exactly the wrong direction. But I honestly don't have any insight into that kind of mindset. I can't put myself in that kind of mindset. I can't do it.
I understand. I just thought I'd ask that question. You know, here
it's a good question.
You're interacting, and, you know, folks out there, you know, you need to stand up. I mean, we live on a planet, and the planet is in such trouble right now that if we don't do something with each other, with the planet, I mean, how long can we last doing this?
You know, when I was in the legislature, one of the things I learned is how powerful it is to receive emails and phone calls and postcards and letters from your constituents. So we in California are blessed to be represented by a good, strong, Democratic group of people in Congress. But I would say writing to the White House is really important. Just, you know, sign that postcard, send that email and say, do not do this in my name.
Right, and don't do it with my taxes.
Exactly.
You know, not only are they doing it in our name, but they're taking our monies away from us. I mean,
it's important to stand up and be counted. And even though sometimes we feel like we're fighting losing battles, you have to fight it. Otherwise, you've just stood silent in the face of injustice.
Exactly.
And I forget who it said, but neutrality is on the side of the oppressor. So if you consider yourself neutral, that means you're on the side of the oppressor.
Well, if you don't vote, that means you agree with what's happening. You
right.
Know, someone said, we had a debate, and one woman said, well, not voting is a vote. Oh, no, it's not. It's not a vote. You know, you're better off, you know, even finding one or two issues. If the ballot's overwhelming, you know, at least the important, like we almost had a new sheriff. I mean, but no, certain
right.
people, 26% of our people came out. It's shameful. But anyway, I don't want to end on a negative note. I want to thank you, Noreen Evans. You've just been a delightful, delightful guest.
Why don't
you give your website, how people can get a hold of you, and I just want to wish you all the luck, and thank you so much for serving the people and for trying, you know, for having the heart that you do have.
Oh, thank you. It's been such an honor to be able to do the work that I've been doing, and it's really an honor to be representing these people in the litigation against PG&E as well. And our website is pgelawsuit.com. That's pgelawsuit.com. And there's a whole host of information there on the website. And get informed and speak up.
Well, thank you so much, Noreen Evans, and I wish you all the success. Your success is helping all the people in our community. So thank you once again for being on Women's Spaces.
You're welcome.
Wow, what a great interview. I mean, ladies, we are so blessed that we are able to run for office, that we're able to elect women like Noreen Evans to serve us. I mean, it's just amazing. Well, anyway, we're going to take a musical break. And here's another song I thought is really appropriate. It's called We Are the World, sung by the Countdown Kids. A reminder of the reason we gathered across the nation, because we know children are our future, and we must never lose sight of that. And to remember that children live what they learn. In this situation that we're creating, what are they learning? When we come back, I'll be talking with Christine Pelosi, who is one of the organizers for the San Francisco March and is an American Democratic political strategist from California. She is the author of Campaign Boot Camp, A Guide to Successful Campaigning, and she is also the daughter of Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. So here we go with We Are the World. Yes, we are the children, and the children are crying. They're crying for the adults to stand up. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holt. And without further ado, I want to introduce my guest. On the phone with me is Christine Pelosi. Welcome, Christine. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, I'm just so honored to have you on. You know, before we start, I'd like to tell my listeners just a little bit about you, and if anything I've left off, you can please fill in for me. Is that okay with you?
That's great.
Okay, Christine Pelosi is an American Democratic Party political strategist from California and author of Campaign Boot Camp and Campaign Boot Camp Basic Training for Future Leaders, books used in the leadership training for candidates and causes. Since 2005, she has directed, you know, I don't know what this means. I couldn't find it. AFSCME, People, Congressional Candidates Boot Camp.
Yes, AFSCME is a major public service union in the country. Last week, your listeners may have heard of the Janus versus AFSCME case, in which the Trump majority on the United States Supreme Court ruled against workers' rights to unionize. And AFSCME People is the political arm of the union at AFSCME that seeks to train union members to run as candidates and also seeks to teach candidates who are running for office about the needs and concerns of working people.
Wow. Well, also, let me continue a little bit of this. She has helped over 40 people and human beings get elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. She holds a J.D. from University of California Hastings College of Law and a bachelor's degree from Georgetown University, Edmund A. Walsh School of Foreign Service. In addition, Pelosi has served as a volunteer board member for the National AIDS Memorial Grove and the New Leaders Council. She has also served as a board member and the interim executive director for the Young Democrats of America. And, of course, the daughter of none other than our beautiful Nancy Pelosi. Anything else you'd like to add, my friend?
Well, like most people in the country and certainly most of the listeners to Women's Faces, I've been heavily active on the streets and on the ground really since the Women's March of January 21st, 2017, and obviously most recently this past week with respect to the not only the Supreme Court rulings against women's health and workers' rights, but also the Trump administration's brutal kidnapping of children at the border and now apparently holding them for ransom, charging their migrant parents money to reunite them. So like so many women and men in our community, I'm deeply concerned about that and have been doing a fair amount of organizing, not only my Women's Caucus members, but just with my community, people who are outraged about what's going on and hoping to make a difference. And so far, our public outcry at least had the policy be reversed, but now the families need to be unified.
Well, it's a real challenge, you know, and you know, you've been working at this a long time. You know, what are some of the challenges, particularly that women face, that, because I don't understand why there's not more women in, say, the Congress or the Senate that are really speaking out very loudly about this, particularly on, I would say, the GOP side. Go ahead.
Let me talk about the Democratic side, because 100% of the Senate, United States Senate Democrats have co-sponsored Senator Dianne Feinstein's Keep Families Together Act. 100% of the House Democrats, male and female, have supported a change in this immigration policy, stood up last week and voted against the House Republicans' cool immigration bill, voted against their tax scam, and voted to protect the Affordable Care Act. So on our side of the ledger, on the side of the ledger where I work, which is the progressive side and the Democratic side, we have been 100% unified in fighting back. Where we need to, have some creative tension and coalition building is what's the vision and the plan going forward, and how can we approach the issues such as immigration with more Republicans on board to try to change the policy now and not wait till after the election. And I think that, you know, the Republican Party is finding a very, very difficult time challenging their president. Those of us who are progressives know that Democrats had no problem challenging President Clinton and President Obama, but when it comes to challenging their own, holding their own accountable, these Trump Republicans are very, very hesitant to do so. And I think they're paying a price among their constituents who want to see change.
You know, I want to ask you, I want to go back a little bit about the decision that around unions that the Supreme Court just made. My father was a union man. He belonged to Mailers Union No. 9 in Los Angeles, worked for the newspaper, Los Angeles Daily News, for God forever. And, you know, he was a real strong union person. And then all of a sudden, you know, people start challenging, you know, if you want to join the union or you don't, you know. And then all of a sudden you begin to realize that the union's bringing all these goodies to the workplace. Why shouldn't it be mandatory that everybody belongs if they're all benefiting? So I don't understand what is the provision that came down from the Supreme Court, and also how can people overcome that?
Well, two things. First of all, there were 41 years of labor law precedent on the Supreme Court that said exactly what you talked about, which is that if the union creates a collective bargain for everybody in the workspace, and everybody in the workspace has to pay their fair share of that result. So, for example, if you're a teacher, it's one thing to say you don't want the teachers' union to be giving a share of your money to candidates. That's one thing. But if you're saying you don't want to share, you don't want to have to pay union dues for the teachers union that's going to negotiate whether or not you get a lunch break, whether or not you get months off for the summer, whether or not you get continuing education and mentorship, whether or not you have a union representative at your side if a parent or a student accuses you of violating the rules. So those are situations where it is absolutely clear that 100% of the teachers at the school benefit from the bargaining of the teachers union, and yet apparently are those who want to be free riders, who want to lower the collective voice by saying, I want to, you know, I want to take advantage of the vacation, the education, the mentoring, the lunch break, the assistance if I get into trouble. I just don't want to have to pay for it. And so I think that that's, you know, it's grossly unfair. The Supreme Court up until last week thought so too for 41 years. But then Neil Gorsuch, a man sitting in Merrick Garland's stolen seat, the seat that was stolen from President Barack Obama, who sought to fill it after Scalia died, that man who testified at the Senate that he would respect precedent throughout 41 years of precedent last week. So why do I mention this? Two reasons. One, to answer your specific question about unions, because people can still join unions. People should still support unions. People should still speak out and represent, you know, stand up for the union workers in their communities who are trying to get benefits for their workers, number one. And number two, because when they put this next justice up to replace Justice Kennedy, don't take them at their word when they say, oh, I respect precedent when it comes to something like Roe versus Wade or the Affordable Care Act or the Voting Rights Act, because frankly, we have learned we cannot take Trump's nominees at their word, and instead we have to push to get to the actual facts.
Well, you know, as you were talking, all of a sudden, what came to my mind was the Triangle Fire. I don't know, way back in the early 1900s. And what was so interesting about that fire is that the unions were at that time organizing for safety, and this was one of the only factories that would not participate with the union. And look what happened. There were no safety regulations. And people have to recognize, if you don't have a union, you don't have a voice. You really do not have a voice. And that's the thing that's so perplexing to me, is that this ruling seems to, they're trying to pull the voice away. They figure if you don't have to pay for it, nobody's going to pay for it, and then the union will collapse. Well, I hope people say the heck with it. We're all going to join the union in rebellion. Would you agree with that?
Well, I would love that, and in fact, that's what a lot of people are doing. A lot of unions have known that this was coming from a very, very, very long time, so they've been getting ready. The unions have been doing outreach to their own members to ever since 2011, when the Republicans won control of a lot of state houses, starting in Wisconsin, and started to roll back workers' rights and something that they call right to work, which we of course refer to as right to work for less, and try to bust the unions. Ever since then, we have been making an effort to reach out to all of our members, and unions have been reaching out to all of their potential members to say, join the union. These are the benefits of union membership. These are the things the union can do, for you. So they were ready because they knew that this case was coming. They knew that the far right was spending millions and millions of dollars to advance these cases through the courts, because you know why? It's return on investment for these corporations. And you mentioned the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire that happened, that tragedy that happened years ago, where people were in a shirt making factory that were basically trapped because the doors were locked, keep them inside and prevent them from being on breaks, and so they were stuck and couldn't get out and they died. The fact of the matter is, unions and good government are the only two entities that stand between the American people and the untrammeled corporate greed of CEOs who, for the most part, say, well, our fiduciary duty is to return a profit to our shareholders, and we want to do that, rather than saying our fiduciary duty is to have a company that values our stakeholders. And we would hope that that in the wake of Janus, and that as we go forward, that there are more companies that take the corporate social responsibility.
Well, I have to agree with you. I mean, when you were, as you were talking and I was listening to you, I was saying, my God, you know, and also, you know, this is a woman's show. And the whole idea behind the show is to help people recognize that, you know, self-esteem and speaking out are very, very important. And so one of the things that I, as I'm listening to you, you speak so well. Where do you get your confidence and your courage? What moves you? What helps you to move through all this stuff that you're moving through? Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, did you hear that question?
I did not.
Okay, the question I have is that you are so articulate and you sound so wonderful when you talk. Where do you get your confidence? You know, this is a woman's show, and my goal, I feel, is just to encourage more and more women to speak out and get involved.
Well, and I appreciate your show for doing that. It's so important that more women do. The fact is that we have so many challenges that we face as women, existential threats to our rights, and also institutional racism and sexism, and people who just aren't used to hearing good advice unless it comes out of the voice of a man. I can't imagine that there are many of your female listeners who haven't had the experience of being at a meeting or making a presentation and suggesting something only to have a man echo her and suddenly get all the credit for the great idea. And I've always said to people,
Christine, you're going to have to come. You're going to have to come closer to your telephone. You're fading out.
I'm sorry. Okay, it must be a bad connection. Anyway, women should know their power, as Nancy Pelosi says. Know your passion, know your why, and speak from your purpose. That's what gives you confidence, knowing that you've got good ideas, you've got lived experience, and only you can make the unique contribution that you have. That's what builds confidence on the good days and builds stamina on the tough days.
Well, let's go into real quickly, we're coming to the end of the segment. How was the San Francisco March on Saturday?
Well, we were actually up in Yountville marching with the Rock the Ride, with Moms Demand Action and Giffords, because we had a pre-existing commitment to do that. So we added Families Belong Together signs and messaging into that fight. As Nancy Pelosi said, families belong together and they shouldn't be separated by the government at the border, and they shouldn't be separated by gun violence in our communities. So we did a blend. It was very powerful. It was very beautiful. And obviously in, you know, the Napa Valley, where the immigrant community really is the lifeblood of the community, of the wine industry, it was incredibly important to do that. I had a lot of friends who were marching in San Francisco sending me pictures and texts from the scene. They were very excited. My friend Steve from Indivisible San Francisco put the march together, so shout out to all the Indivisibles out there. He did an amazing job and got Joan Baez to sing, and she concluded her singing with saying, "I'll see you in jail." So there was certainly a lot of commitment and to do whatever we can to put our bodies on the line for change.
Well, you know, it's just, I think it's an amazing time. Well, we're coming to the end of the segment here. Is there anything else you'd like to share? I mean, it's wonderful. I mean, it must be a real growing up, being Nancy Pelosi's daughter, must have been a wonderful, wonderful experience for you.
Well, it was. It has been. It is. She's an amazing mom and grandmother. And so I see her walk her talk and live her values every day. And I know that right now, in fact, this morning we were talking about what we need to do, continue to do, in the fight for the kids at the border, but also, you know, to really say to people, this is really it. If you care about, you know, healthcare, and people do, and you care about a woman's right to choose, and people do, we really have to leave no stone unturned. We have to have no regrets. We have to use every constitutional means necessary to try to block Donald Trump for shaping the court for decades to come, in a way that will roll back all of our rights. So, you know, that stamina and vision and purpose that she has is inspiring to me. And I know that we have only not only a good chance of winning in November, but we've got to figure out how we're going to win in July to get those families back together and to make sure that the fight for our rights is at the focus. So I would encourage people to sign up with the Democratic Party, with Indivisible, with Planned Parenthood, on Facebook. The Women's Caucus of the California Democratic Party has a lot to say and resources that we share. We're sharing more of them today. But get engaged, get involved, because we need you. And just remember, we, as you started the segment, it was the cries of the children from a whistleblower that sent hundreds of thousands of people into the streets, and it made a difference. And we have these whistleblowers that we keep hearing from in various parts of the administration. So I would say, reach out to your friends who work in these companies and in these sectors of the economy, because they can probably tell you stories of what this is really like, and shining a light on those secret stories.
Christine, I'm going to ask you for your website now.
Go to Facebook and to get my book, go to PelosiBootCamp.com. PelosiBootCamp.com.
And
follow me on Twitter at SF Pelosi. San Francisco Pelosi, SF Pelosi on Twitter.
And I would hope to have you back to talk about the boot camp. It just sounds fascinating. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on Women's Spaces. Give my best to your mother and wish her all the success, you know, with what she's having to challenge with. And also for you, anytime, any of the Women's Caucus or anything that you need, please do not hesitate to call us.
Well, we will take that as an opportunity to call on you and organize together. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you so much, Christine Pelosi. You've just been wonderful to speak with. Well, folks, that's it for our show. Oh, my God, the hour goes by so fast. A special thank you to Noreen Evans, former California state senator, who's working with local lawyers and involved with the many fire victims, and to Christine Pelosi, one of the organizers of the march in San Francisco and a member of the American Democratic Political Strategist Party from California. Remind your friends, Women's Spaces will be aired tonight at 11 p.m. Wishing you a wonderful day.
The woman in your life is you.